Blog Talk Radio.
Kings in the morning, your favorite Blog Talk Radio show. Kings in the morning, your favorite Blog Talk Radio show. Kings in the morning, your favorite Blog Talk Radio show. Your favorite Blog Talk Radio show.
Some of the views and comments expressed on the J. King Network contain mature content and may be deemed as offensive in nature. However, they may not reflect the same views held by the network itself. So please, use discretion when tuning in.
Good morning, everybody. My name is J. King. Welcome to Kings in the Morning. With me are my co-host, Johnny Graham, Cracker, David.
Good morning, everyone. I hope your weekend was fine. Let's get ready to ride on the J. King Network. And I'm not saying Happy New Year.
Robert Redwine.
I'm going to put my panties to the sky and show you what you need, girl.
God.
Oh, yep.
Oh my God.
That was good, Robert. Mr. DLW.
Oh my God. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another marvelous Monday. And you know I'm wishing you a progressive and productive day.
San Diego Simi.
Look here. If you get tight pockets, go on and free your willy to Pocahontas with a soul finger, como se llamas? Because of the pasty substances, that's why. And if you didn't understand that, you'll understand this.
And that was a retarded, that was a retarded one, because he went from one ka-ka-ka-ka-ka too many. Of course, Tenacious Lady.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, gentlemen. And you know what? I'm just going to pull a punch and say, Happy New Year.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And ladies and gentlemen, coming to the microphone is an icon.
Oh, yeah.
A legend.
The head of AARP.
And a radio show host who needs a freak. Doom, 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 doom. He's a pimp, player, and hustler when it comes to getting his dinero. Johnny, what are you going to do about that?
Dinero? You want your dinero?
Okay, what happened to Lynn? Maybe Tyler's not there. Who said that?
Lynn's
supposed to say something right there.
I know.
Who's supposed
He's
to say
not on the board?
Now, he's on the phone. I mean, I see him. He got himself on mute. He's the Mac Daddy. He's the Mac Daddy of all mute daddies, and he's the mute daddy of all Mac Daddies.
I think you're the Mac Daddy of all mute daddies.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking about none other than our general manager. Stick a fork in it. Our program director. Rolling around as rotisserie. That's right.
Can you hear me now?
That's right. That's right.
Can
we
hear
can hear
now?
You now.
Okay.
Yeah. Our head honcho.
I had to switch headphones. Something's wrong with my other set, I guess.
Oh. Our big Willie.
You so silly.
That was just lame as a you so silly.
That was
our
combo.
Man, it's a Monday. What y'all gonna do, baby?
Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for our man. It's a Monday. What y'all gonna do, baby? Sambo, Mr. Lynn, Tolliver Jr.
All aboard! Yeah.
I thought you had switched over to Verizon or something.
No, Lynn, I got some headsets right now that I bought last week.
Okay.
But I bought a warranty with them for $4, $4.50
okay.
or whatever.
Okay.
And for 2 years, I get to trade them in every time they go out. Mine just went out the other day. I got them sap suckers with me right now. I got the receipt in the car because you got to have a receipt. You know, they say, you know, you can buy this, you know, the warranty, but you still got to have a receipt and all that stuff. I said, I'm going to fix these suckers. I put everything in my glove compartment box.
Suckers. Yeah.
So now that they went out, I'm going to take them right back and get a new set.
There you go.
Even though
now
I had to buy another set while I'm here in Sacramento, I'm going to buy. It's the new set.
Yeah.
Are you still outside?
How was you all's weekend?
Good.
Uneventful.
Terrible.
Well, I had a great week. I had a great one, King Jack. I took my daughter to Golden Corral yesterday. We watched some movies. We had a great time, man.
You took her to the Golden Corral?
Oh, yeah, baby.
Okay, now she going to kill you because she half sick. The Golden Corral fooled me one time.
How's that?
It got me one time. Me and King and Dosti went to the Golden Corral, and I'm telling you, the food was so good. It was so tender. It was so, But we went to, I thought they were all the same no matter where you go. You know, like they're the same. Mm. I craved for the Golden Corral. We went to that damn Golden Corral again, and it was the Golden Sterile. Because I felt like I was going to be sterile once I finished eating this.
What'd you eat?
The same kind of stuff I tried to eat the first, except for it wasn't fresh. It looked like they had a bunch of flies. Just okay, I'm joking. I'm joking about the flies, but they might as well have them. They taste like They taste like they have flies. Lynn, I had a psychic on my show yesterday.
Oh yeah, babe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
I missed that.
Mm-hmm. It proved to me one thing.
What's that?
Psychics are real perceptive. Lynn, I'm gonna do some psychic work on you right now, okay?
Oh, here we go.
All right. Let's roll with it. Let's roll with it.
Okay, so Lynn, you've had some past hurts in your life that you've had to overcome. You know, you've had some ups and downs in your career field. Right now, you know, you're just trying to just navigate through life and see what's available to you. You're a good person, though, and people love you. And I see something really bright in your future, something happening in your life right now that has you where you feel like it's on the upswing. Something good is going to happen. You've been working for a certain thing for a while, and you just kind of see it coming to fruition. Am I close here?
No.
Man, you should have called him yesterday.
You know what happens? You know what happens is this. You know, I pretended to be a psychic. I call myself Madame Babushka, you know, and Babushka, you know, I don't know if you know what a babushka is. A babushka is like a cloth that's like a square, but when you fold it from one point to the opposite point, it forms a rectangle. Then you put that over your head, you know, and tie it underneath your chin. It's a babushka,
okay.
You know, and then the guy that was on the show with me was, you know, I forgot what they called his name, but, you know, we acted like we were, you know, gay psychic people. So, His name was Ramon. Madame Babushka and Ramon.
He lived
usually what they do is, you know, all the ones that are right, like, you know, if somebody predicts something right, they promote those over and over. They don't tell you about the ones that are wrong, you know, that, you know, it's just like everything else. They're going to promote the best parts and the bad parts. Well, they're not going to, you know, hey, I see something bright in your future. And then the guy dies, you know. Well, maybe that is bright because he went to heaven. He went to heaven. That's bright.
He went to heaven. You know, it was bright.
That was
but
bright.
But he went to hell, though, Lynn. She
yeah.
was wrong about
was,
that.
It,
now
it
he's burning his ass off saying, I thought you said something bright was going to happen.
Well, what if he wanted to go to hell? You know, so then.
Who wants to go
know.
To hell?
But this is the thing with psychics. You know,
well,
like,
you know what I notice about psychics, though? All the information
that?
They give you is general information. And
not all, King J. I disagree.
Robert, you should have called in yesterday. It's too late now. It's too late for you to have an opinion. Your opinion was needed yesterday. Yesterday
oh,
you
yeah,
gave
yeah.
general information. You weren't here
okay.
to receive it.
Like a Zodiac. Like a Zodiac forecast.
Now, you know, she had saw a picture of me, right, Lynn? So
where at? She saw it on online.
Her, you know, what? So she obviously she went online looking for me as we were doing the show. So then she started saying things, you know, but they were just general things. And she started, you know, and you're this and that. But you know, it's stuff that you can find on the internet,
right?
You know, so I know that as she was talking to me. And that's what a lot of people don't understand, is once they have your name and stuff like that, you know, if you've done anything, they can find you. So it was,
yeah.
And by the way, Eric did predict today would be Monday. You did do that yesterday, Eric. So I want to give Eric, no, I'm serious, I want to give Eric McAllister some love for that and a round of applause.
Yeah, baby. Baby.
And Mr. WD Wait. Did say the sun would rise on the east, and for that you are correct too. And for all the psychics out there, you get an applause too.
Warning! Warning! Bullshitter alert! Bullshitter alert! Warning! Warning! Bullshitter alert! Bullshitter alert! Warning! Bullshitter alert!
If you go to a psychic to find out what's happening in your life,
yeah,
and you don't pray to God and ask God to help you see, figure it out,
yeah,
everything that you got coming to you, you deserve.
Hmm.
Yeah. Hmm.
Amen.
When I say everything,
Sylvia
I
Brown.
Mean everything. Huh?
You remember Sylvia Brown? You know, the one
yeah.
that...
I'm going to tell you how much I... Let me tell you how much I remember Sylvia Brown.
Okay.
I remember Sylvia Brown this much. Hold on. Because, see, Sammy, you didn't listen to the show yesterday. Had you listened to the show...
No, I didn't.
Not only would you have known that I remember Sylvia Brown...
Psychics say they possess mystical powers, but can they really prove it? With $1 million on the line, a group of psychics were willing to step up and be tested. How did they do? Here's ABC's Juju Chang.
Calling all psychics. The Nightline interns are spreading the word. There's $1 million cash prize for anyone who can demonstrate supernatural powers. The man with the checkbook, a renowned magician and psychic debunker named Banachek.
Were you nervous that no one was going to show up?
I truly didn't think anybody would show up.
Banachek is clearly not psychic because several people did show up, including a medium, a tarot card reader, and a palm reader. But first, a little more on that money. It actually belongs to the James Randi Foundation. That's Banachek's boss, magician James Randi.
Right, I'm looking really hard.
Which hand?
This one.
No, actually, you're wrong.
There you go.
I have no idea where it went.
The amazing Randi has spent 30 years debunking psychic claims.
What would you say to your critics who say you just don't have an open mind?
Oh, I have an open mind, but not so open that my brains will fall out.
After confirming the money does in fact exist, we're ready to get started. Let's meet contestant number one.
My name is Jesse Bravo, and I'm a stockbroker by day. But by night, I'm a psychic, and I speak to dead people.
A psychic stockbroker? Well, he can't be much worse than the regular ones.
Unfortunately, not everyone's open to the idea. So as soon as you tell somebody you're a psychic, they have to make a decision. Are you completely crazy?
So are you crazy, Jesse?
I think we're all crazy.
Here are the rules for Jesse's test. 12 envelopes. Inside, photos of 11 random living people and one very famous dead person. To win, Jesse has to locate that dead person 9 out of 12 times.
Hi, Jesse. Like a game show. Go ahead. Thank you very much.
The odds of winning by luck are about 1 in a million. But Jesse, of course, isn't counting on luck.
What I try to ask is, whoever is gone, will you please just show me which envelope they're sort of contained in? You believe that's a dead person? Are you ready?
But the spirits didn't answer. Jesse's first pick was this girl, and she's very much alive.
That is a living person.
Attempt two.
Are you ready? This one is a live person.
Strike two. He was supposed to find Elvis Presley.
Elvis Presley. We know he's dead, right?
Absolutely.
Yep. I'm considered very good at what I do, and boy, am I bombing.
Yep. You believe that this is a dead person?
I'm hoping so.
After another failure.
A live person.
A live person. Internally, I was crumbling.
It's Jesse Bravo's last chance.
Well, that was very direct. Well, that one very strongly, I'm guessing.
I'm trying different techniques.
Okay. This one is?
It's live.
Think?
Yeah.
You're right. It's live.
Jesse may have failed, but he says the problem wasn't with him. It was with the test itself.
Asking an envelope, an inanimate object, to answer a question, it's a really tough thing to do. Maybe there's other people that can do that. I'm not one of them, obviously.
So why would you do it? If you're not one of them, why would you do it? Why would you subject yourself to such a thing?
Try to get that mill, right? Try to get that million.
Yeah. See, I think this is where the rubber meets the road for me. I believe that, you know, when you really do have these kind of abilities, you are a special person that, you know, it's almost like you, you know, it's a blessing from God, and you have to use it the right way. And if money becomes your motivator, even if you do have those
psychic talents, powers,
when you're using them for gain like that, you know it's going to turn into a curse for you.
You know, Sylvia Brown, what Simi brought up, she predicted that Tracy Dugard girl was dead.
Yes,
and it turned out that
you know,
she was alive.
Looking, what happened was I pressed the wrong one. And I just let it play through. But yeah, Sylvia Brown was exposed on
the man you buried.
Here it is right here. This is the one right here.
Well, Craig and Pam Akers would try almost anything over the years to find Sean. They even consulted a famous psychic on national television. 4 months after Sean disappeared, the Akers appeared on the Montel Williams show with self-proclaimed psychic Sylvia Brown. Brown told the distraught parent that Sean was dead and told them in great detail where to search for his body. To some, she's a window into the future, a spiritual leader who can communicate with the dead.
Sylvia, I want to thank you for sharing such a special gift with us.
To others, Sylvia Brown is nothing but a con artist and a fake.
She's wrong more often than she's right, as far as I can tell so far. There have been a number of missing person cases that she's got flat wrong.
Case in point, just listen to what Sylvia Brown told Sean Hornbeck's parents about their son's kidnapper nearly 4 years ago on the Montel Williams show.
The guy was dark-skinned, although he wasn't black. He was more Hispanic-looking. Had real long, dark hair. And, strange enough, Hispanic, but he had dreadlocks.
Then Sylvia Brown confirmed their worst fears.
Is he still with us?
Thankfully, Sean Hornbeck was found last week alive and well. His alleged abductor, Michael Devlin, is not Hispanic, and he didn't have dreadlocks at the time of the abduction.
He's a white
Brown
man.
Brown did say Sean was abducted by a man named Michael, but she was terribly wrong about the most important detail of all.
Hearing that was one of the hardest things we ever had to hear.
The search for Sean was diverted, according to his parents, based on the misinformation Brown had given, costing the effort valuable man hours. Sean's parents, Craig and Pam Akers, also say Brown offered to help them for money.
Is it true she also offered to help for $700?
Yes, we were told that if we wanted to talk with her additionally, that we could at her normal standard fee.
And that's $700 an hour?
I believe that's what it was. In a statement issued today, Brown's business manager wrote, Sylvia has never charged a fee to any law enforcement person, agency, or any individual for her work on a missing persons case and has worked on hundreds of such cases over the years with positive results. The statement goes on to say, quote, she cannot possibly be 100% correct in each and every one of her predictions. She has, during a career of over 50 years, helped literally tens of thousands of people. But there are also some people she's hurt. For instance, on the Montel Williams show in 1999, Brown shared this information with the grandmother of a missing child named Opal Jo Jennings.
She's not dead, but what bothers me. Now, I've never heard of this before, but for some reason she was taken and put into some kind of slavery thing and taken into Japan.
4 years later, the little girl's remains were found near Fort Worth, Texas. An autopsy showed she was killed shortly after vanishing. Brown often says that only God is right all the time, but her critics insist she preys on people in need, people like Sean Hornbeck's parents who were desperate for information.
People come to her with a problem, they're desperate, and she preys on that. She takes advantage of that. She takes their money. She makes believe that she's psychic, and that's reprehensible. It's evil is what it is, evil.
Well, all this made us wonder how many people believe in psychics. The Baylor Institute for Studies of Religion has actually studied this. Here's the raw data. 13% of Americans they surveyed said they believe in psychics. Women are almost twice as likely as men to believe psychics can foresee the future, 18% versus 8%. Geography also seems to make a difference. Just 8% of Southerners surveyed had ever called or consulted a psychic medium or a fortune teller. That's compared with 11% of Midwesterners, 13% of Westerners, and 19% who live in the East. Well, up next, a man who keeps track of Sylvia.
Okay, so how many of you guys believe in psychics?
Well, let me say this before you take that survey. Anybody could talk to somebody that's dead. Anybody. All they got to do. Listen carefully. All they got to do is walk into a funeral home. Everybody in there is dead, and you can talk to them. You can talk to them. They ain't gonna talk back. You can surely talk to them.
What if they do talk back?
Then you better run as fast as you fucking can.
Now I want you guys to know, Sylvia Brown died November 20th, 2013, and all reports say she didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
No.
Jared.
Wow.
Yeah, but, you know, like this, what's not nice is she's telling people stuff that, you know, if you ever notice some of those ads, they say, for entertaining purposes only.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't say that when the guy says, come to Midas, we'll fix your car. And then at the bottom it says, for entertaining purposes only. Hey,
you know what?
Hospital.
But see, Lynn. But Midas is regulated. Do you know that there's no regulations? There's nothing that regulates psychics.
That's because, you know, and I can't say that there isn't, you know, a psychic, but I usually don't believe anybody, you know, because if you could find somebody that can tell you what tomorrow's going to bring, why isn't everybody standing in line? You know, like this. Okay, what's your name? Jack Fisher. You know, yeah, okay, let me tell you something, Jack. You might as well just go home and you know,
pack
not
it
doing
up.
Anything. And yeah,
pack,
because
pack it up. It's done.
Because you're finished. You're finished, baby. Okay, what's your name? Carolyn Stewart. Okay, Carolyn, you're going to be the first woman vice president of the United States. You know, why would there be a line of people to go to them?
Right.
But I believe there's people that are gifted.
And plus,
I mean,
if you into stuff, like if you a thief, if I was a thief or a robber or something like that, before I did a crime, you know what I would do?
Call the psychic.
I go see Sylvia Brown or a psychic. Okay, you know, I'm getting ready to do this caper tomorrow. What's going to happen? Oh, damn, you got a guy with T-shirt and panties with you? Yeah, his tapes are going to get in a bunch right before you guys do it. He's going to get upset.
I'm going to look into the sky and tell you what you need, girl.
Oh, my God.
Bobby Palmer.
Jay King's News Reel.
Love and Hip Hop Atlanta star Benzino shot on his way to his mother's funeral. Love and Hip Hop Atlanta star Raymond Scott, a.k.a. Benzino, was shot Saturday afternoon while driving in his mother's funeral procession, and police already arrested a suspect. Law enforcement sources tell TMZ, we reported that his mother, Mary Ann Scott, passed away recently, and the Scott family were paying their respects to their loved one. Benzino, the former owner of the Source magazine, was shot after an argument erupted between family members in the funeral procession. Benzino was hit, and he was rushed to a hospital. Remarkably, the rest of the family went on with the funeral, and the preacher says when they arrived, both the limo and the hearse were blood-stained, according to reports. Benzino is currently in a hospital and appears to be in stable condition. His fiance, Althea, posted a picture with the statement, "Ma, poor baby, I effing feel like I'm married to the mob. This is crazy. Thank you, God, he is okay." Benzino's 36-year-old nephew, Guy Scott, has been charged in the shooting and is now being held in custody and is scheduled to be arraigned Monday in the Plymouth District Court. Plymouth Court District Attorney Timothy Cruz said, the incident was between two vehicles whose occupants knew each other. The driver of a Bentley shot the driver of a red Dodge SUV who exited his car and was taken to the Duxbury Police Station by a passerby. The injured red Dodge SUV driver, who officials say was in his 40s, was then transported by ambulance to the hospital. The Bentley driver has been arrested and will be arraigned Monday on a charge of armed assault with intent to murder. Benzino's business partner, castmate, and friend, Stevie J, posted these pictures, which show a stable and well as can be expected Benzino after being shot 3 times by his nephew. Benzino was shot in his arm and his back, and his back was grazed by a bullet. Now, they say he was shot 3 times. They just said he was shot in his arm and his grazed. That's only 2. For those worrying about which shoulder the injury occurred, apparently with phones, with one camera, the phone flips the image. Then I woke up and, okay. Anyway, so Benzino got shot.
He should have called psychic.
Now, see, that's the thing. Lynn, that's the time for you to call a psychic. Hey, we're on our way to my mom's funeral. My cousin is going to be here. We don't really like each other. What's it going to be?
You go get shot, baby.
Wear a bulletproof vest.
Hey, we have a psychic in the chat room. Psychic Valdine Love, we'd love for you to call in. 347-205. Robert, maybe you can get a reading. 9368.
Yeah, I would love to.
For the psychic, press the 1. 347-205-9366. Press the 1. We'd love to have you on.
What's the difference between a psychic and a what, Johnny?
A muse. You know, what's that show? The
muse. A muse is a person that's supposed to enhance you. You know, it's like a pump-em-up type person. You know, Joe Bullard. Pump-em-up, baby. You know, didn't you see that movie where I think it could have been like Meryl Streep was a muse or just somebody. I forgot who the guy was, Billy Crystal or somebody.
Yeah,
yeah,
and,
I remember that. I remember that.
No, you know what? It was and then Sharon Stone,
that was the one. That was
to, it wasn't. It was the other guy that would like a Billy Crystal.
Ooh, gosh. Let me look it up. I'm gonna go to the IMDb and look up Sharon Stone, and then I'll find out what it is. Sharon Stone. Yeah, baby. Mm-hmm.
Here's another story. While you're doing that.
Yeah.
Jay King's News Reel.
Police find Florida mom hiding in bedroom at a teenage party. What's not unusual? Cops show up to bust a teen party involving booze and find someone hiding in the bedroom. What is unusual? That person is the home's 56-year-old owner and the mother to the 18-year-old who threw the bash. Police say they arrived at the home in Naples, Florida, just after midnight yesterday to find beer cans, bottles, and pot in the yard. As they approached, the partiers went inside and shut the lights off. Mario Winnett, 18, answered the knock on the door. With the assistance of the two girls who were keeping her upright, say police, and passed along her mother's cell phone number. Police rang Carolyn Winnett, who said she was unaware of the party and out of town. She also gave them the okay to break up the party, which they moved inside to do. And that's when they say they found people hiding in a number of rooms and closets, and Carolyn Winnett hiding in a bedroom. She then changed her tune. The Naples Daily News reports that Winnett kept making statements, trying to justify having the party and allowing alcohol. Per police, among them that she thought they'd be safe if they didn't have to drive. She says she didn't buy the booze, but she's charged with 26 counts of selling, giving, or serving alcoholic beverages to persons under the age of 21, all the same. Both mother and daughter were hit with one count of having an open house party, when it certainly isn't the first parent to get caught at a teen party. Can you imagine, Lynn?
Wow.
You lie. So you're lying, right?
Yeah.
The police call you. Lynn Tolliver, we're at your home and there's a party going on. What? A party going on? Yes, there's a party going on at your house.
You stop that party now. I don't know what the hell is going on with that party. They shouldn't be in there having a party. Get the Mickey Vickies out my house.
We will do just that, sir. Get out of the house. We just spoke with the proud owner of this beautiful palatial estate, and you guys are in trouble. You shouldn't be here. All of you are in trouble. Get out of this house. Get out of these closets. Get out. Get out. Get out. Get out.
I'm waiting on these police.
Mr. Tolliver, is that you?
Oh, me? I ain't Mr. Tolliver. No. I'm his brother. I'm Ben Tolliver.
Ben. Ben Tolliver.
Because you get busted. You know, I mean, when you get busted, I mean, you got to come up with something. That ain't me. I'm not me. I'm not me.
Hey, the guy was Albert Brooks. He wrote that.
Yeah,
he was
Albert
the
Brooks,
Muse.
Yeah.
The Muse in 1999. Sharon Stone.
Movie. I like that movie.
Andy McDowell. Yeah. Andy McDowell is a woman, for those of you who don't know. Yeah. Right.
John Payne said, why call a psychic? Shouldn't they call you first since they know everything?
That's big business, though. Palm readers and all.
Hey.
Remember Miss Cleo?
What about people?
Yeah.
Miss Cleo got in a bunch of... You know what pissed me off about the whole Miss Cleo thing?
What's that? Call me now.
Miss Cleo got in trouble, but it was the white boys that had her, you know, that she worked for.
Right.
They didn't get in trouble?
They didn't get in trouble. No, Miss Cleo took the brunt of that hit.
What happened to Dion? She just retired?
Dion Warwick, Psychic Network.
Dion had a little like, and hey, Dion cleaned up for a while too.
Yeah,
she did.
But you know, it got shut down. I bet she didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
Robert was calling every morning.
Oh yeah, that would be a great slogan for a psychic. The
what
psychic
slogan?
Hotline. We can see it coming.
What about the preachers, man, that have the gift of prophecy, man? You know,
yeah,
there's someone in the audience out there that I know that has
where psychics are born from those ministers, you know, like they. But you know, a lot of those dudes are former pimps, right?
Uh-oh.
So what happens is they get busted pimping so much, and they say, man, I can't do this, man. I can't do this jail time. I'm getting too old for this.
Reverend Thang.
And then when they partner say, man, you know Jimmy Mo Mac Daddy's a preacher now.
Reverend Thang.
Right? Jimmy Mo Mac Daddy, how he gonna, he couldn't pimp. How he gonna preach? That's what I'm saying. He ain't, I mean, like, sometimes I hear you over here talking to these bitches, man, and you be spitting game, and, you know, you be preaching to them, man, and that's why they go and do what they do, man. Jimmy Moe, Mac Daddy ain't got nothing on you.
Bitches.
You should be preaching. And you can't go to jail for it. And you can get all the money you want every day. 365, seven days a week. 24 hours a day, you can even have a little prayer hotline.
Oh,
Reverend
man, Heffler. You know what? You're right. You're right. Give me old Mac Daddy. He ain't nothing. He can't hold that candle to my pimping. I'm going into the preacher game tomorrow.
they got a lot of those healing services.
And then they start pimping.
Go up there with chairs.
Huh? Then they start preaching. Then they start making up their little, you know. One of Robert's pimp friends used to be a pimp, turned into a preacher. He came on here and said that he was so adamant about his pimping that he took what he did in pimping and turned it into preaching. And he felt like the preachers that were out there, he was crushing them. And he was, you know what? He was the first preacher that I talked to. Like, you know how the pimps every year they have the pimp of the year?
Yeah.
he's gonna probably try to institute preacher of the year.
Player's ball.
The preacher's ball.
Preacher's ball.
That's your friend. That's your friend too.
And the sweetest preacher goes to Bobby Jones. Bobby Jones for the fourth year in a row is the sweetest preacher.
Oh, thank you for showing me a little inspiration.
Oh, man.
Thank you, Jim.
I never heard Bobby Jones perform.
Listen, Bobby Jones was on the boat when we was on the – he was on the boat when we did the Tom Joyner cruise. And right before we KO'd, they KO'd first. The gospel thing, and Bobby Jones was there, and these are the Bobby Jones Sagas, and they sang this song, Lynn, and I'm telling you right now, the song was so good. I want to hear it again. Rewind it, and let's do it again.
She'll be a little bit of
I was like, you know what? I'm like, I don't care where you at. You know, the ghetto is going to be somewhere right there.
The ghetto.
Because it was so funny, Lynn. The show was over with, right?
Yeah.
He hit the head of the damn stage. Rewind it. I'm watching him on TV from my hotel room. I mean, from my room in my cabin. And I just start saying, soon, very soon, we are going to see the king.
Reverend BJ.
Bobby Jones. So, but a lot of preachers come from that life, and you know, and you know, so and people that go to church, you know, they, you know, they fall in line with it and they like it because it's a story of redemption. You know, and so and preachers,
entertainment.
And preachers know this. They know that the story, that people that go to church like the story of redemption, because a lot of those people in church are looking for redemption. They're looking for a start over. So they get a chance to see a guy, you know, standing in front of them, you know, doing with a start over. And it's inspiring. And you know, and I'm not saying that all preachers do that, but the majority of them, I think, do. But there's a few that really... that really, you know, change their lives around, and they, you know, they redeem themselves, and they go out and they preach the gospel with their few and far between.
During that prosperity
gospel,
man, people were going broke.
Right, Lynn. I was wrong, but now I'm right.
I was wrong, but now I'm right.
What do you think of that TV show that they had on TV? Wasn't it the preachers or something like that? And we had an L.A. preacher.
I think it was horrible. It was disrespectful to God. And,
yeah.
It didn't last?
No, it didn't last.
Oh, is it over with? No, I thought they were just on hiatus.
I think they might. Oh, okay. I hadn't seen the next episode.
Well, you hadn't seen the next episode because the first season's over with. They you know, they got to get season two. They got to get some more tomfoolery. They got to get some old tomfoolery in the you know, in the bucket so they can.
Oh, okay.
They're doing
just
that
like
money now.
I like to hear them talk, though, man. You know, I love it. They're orators.
That's part of
that.
Hey, listen, that's part of the trick, because you like to hear them talk.
And rappers,
you know,
mm-hmm.
and you know, so, and you might say, well, you know, I'm not gonna get caught up in it, but it ain't just about you. It's about everybody else, also all the people that are. You know, that are looking for salvation, that are looking for the right road. They get caught up with with one of these false prophets, one of these guys who aren't real. And so then people say, well, you know, I don't understand how she ended up having sex with the preacher when it's her fault too. Well, sometimes it's not her fault. Sometimes, that person was looking for help, looking for a direction. And the guy that you're looking for direction from, he, because Simi liked to hear him talk, that means other people like to hear him talk, and they hear him talk, and some people say, well, you know, don't get caught up in what he's saying, I mean, and who he is, because he's just a man, listen to what he's saying, but this is a new person that's in a new walk, and they, of course, trust and believe and follow and do as this person says, because that person is the minister.
But Jay, don't you feel that some of them are opportunists?
What'd you say? Stop, Simi. Stop. Did you hear D.O.W. talking? What'd you say, D.O.W.?
No, I didn't.
I know, because you're too busy doing a cock-a-doodle-doo thing. Like you're a damn woodpecker.
He was kind of on the low, and I didn't hear his low voice.
Well, that's because you were woodpeckering.
No, he was talking.
Was
he tried to talk in tongue. He was trying to talk in tongue.
Well, he was trying to talk in tongue.
Touch not.
Okay,
so
what were you saying, Mr. D.O.W.?
My question, Jay, is: don't you think some of them are opportunists and they take full advantage of the fact that there is some money in becoming a preacher or a minister?
No, I think most of them are.
As opposed to. Right.
Most of them.
Right.
Listen, God said many will take the wrong road headed to righteousness.
Okay.
Many meaning most people. Because most people are going to get caught up in doctrine. Very few people are going to get caught up in spirituality. That's why you will have people argue. There are people that will argue that you're going to burn in hell versus you're not burning in hell. Okay? And then they will, and they will take the same scripture that a guy, and these are theologians too. I'm talking about, so these theologians, and theologians are guys that study the Bible, they got a degree in theology, and so And so here you got these theologians, they say you do burn in hell, and then you got these theologians say you don't burn in hell, that it's just metaphoric, it's not real, and it's for Satan's and his angels, which to me would make good logical sense, that God would make a place for Satan and his fallen angels to burn for eternity because of where they were on the throne. As mortal men, we were born into sin. So why would he hold us accountable the same way he holds Satan, who was an angel, and his fallen angels? Satan. Why would he hold us accountable to the same thing? We never sat that close to God. I mean, we're lucky to be, you know, to even be walking the planet. So that makes sense to me. But you're going to have an argument for people who believe versus people who don't. Now, these people, we get caught up in the doctrine of what they believe or don't believe versus the spirituality of God, which is spreading the good news about love and about, you know, being kind to your neighbors and, you know, being helpful to one another, you know, being uplifting to one another. To me, that's really the message that God is trying to get out.
Okay.
But so you get a lot of people that get caught up in doctrine. And so they're like gangbangers. You know, they're Crippin' and Bloodin'. Because you could go, going to a Crip territory and be a Blood. Or going to a Blood territory and be a Crip and watch what happens.
You have to change your clothes.
Now going to a Pentecostal area and be a Jehovah's Witness. Or going to a Jehovah's Witness territory and be a Baptist. Somebody getting their ass whooped. Because it's going down.
They say the gospel means the good news.
Yeah. Well, that's what we should be spreading. But all in the name of God. And they ain't none of that God. Doctrine is not God. Spirit is God. Doctrine is man. And that's what everybody has to understand. If you know, you can believe a doctrine, if that's the vessel to get you to God, believe your doctrine. But don't try to put your doctrine on somebody else. And they shouldn't try to put their doctrine on you. What you guys should be in concert about is the fact that you guys are both looking for goodness and righteousness.
Right.
And then play this song. Play this song.
Hesitation in the way that you relay your love to me. Trying to test and see how imperfect, perfect love can be. Oh, I know you've been hurt before. I know how it is when you're trying to find you. Cause I've been hurt before. And I've been in repair mode.
I know
it
is.
Hey! Can't let that phase make you give away us. Give up on trust. That's when we start to argue.
Make me go, hey! That's the new Christopher Williams joint, y'all. You got to
Eric,
buy it.
Hey, Eric predicted that.
Eric McAllister said he predicted that I would say, hey, and start crip walking. And that's exactly what
crip
I did.
Crip walking.
I know what it takes to get through. Can let that phase make you give away up, give up on trust. Cause that's when we start to talk you.
He said we shouldn't have to fight to make love and we shouldn't have to break up to make up.
It's not conditional.
Non-conditional. It's not conditional. When it comes to loving you. It's not traditional.
Not traditional.
When it comes to loving you.
Baby, you ain't gonna be a reality TV just to find that real.
real love. You ain't gonna go in competition with a million other girls. You ain't gonna worry, baby. You ain't gonna stress a thing. Oh no, I'ma give the best that I've got, keeping alive when I'm gone. Oh,
I love this song, y'all. This is my favorite song right now.
Wow.
Jay.
And when I listen to this song, I have to listen to it twice.
Without you biting my head off?
Huh?
I want to say something without you biting my head off. Can I say something, Jay?
Yeah.
Jay, I know you like that song, and I like the words, too. But to me,
yeah,
you know, who am I? But that song don't really do nothing for me, man.
Okay,
I mean,
you know what?
Nice. Go ahead.
Okay. Everybody else is loving it. And let me say this to you. Probably why the song don't do nothing for you is because you can't sing it.
It doesn't bother me that Jay goes there with me.
Okay, so let me ask everybody.
Sorry.
Let me ask everybody. Okay, so send me. Because everybody
don't
love the song. Let me explain
like it.
Let me tell you something. 1/3 or 1% of the population gotta like it for it to be a hit.
Okay.
Okay. So let me ask, Lynn, how do you like the song?
Great hand dance record. Great. It's a great song. I like Christopher Williams, man.
Johnny Graham Cracker Davis, how do you like the song?
I'm gonna have to hear it a couple more times, but what I'm hearing sounds good.
Simi,
okay.
You got it, buddy.
Mr. DOW, Jimmy. How do you like the song?
I like the song. It seemed to have a real nice vibe to it, and the lyrics is true love. It's about real love.
The lyrics
right.
are fantastic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Tina, how do you like the song?
I love Christopher Williams. I like him back in the day when, you know, Wesley Snipes said, "You pretty motherfucker," and stabbed him in the head. On New Jack City, I love him. So I like the song. It's a party go-getter. It gets you off your seat, and I can see you doing the two-step to it.
Yeah, hand dance. That's a good hand dance record. And that's the kind of record that the more you play it, the more you want to play
it.
The more you like it, you pretty motherfucker.
You know, I love it. I love when
you
just open up and just let it all hang out, Lady T. Robert Redwine, how do you like it?
That was the best part of the movie.
How did you like it?
I debate on that.
But that was hilarious
okay,
to me.
Hold on. We're not talking about that part of the damn movie. We're talking
about Christopher Williams.
Not conditional. Robert, how did you like it?
Lyrics are fly and everything. He really goes there. Like, he hasn't been out for a while, so, you know, we've been, you know, kind of looking for him. We're looking for that old school to come back because this new music is booty.
Okay, can I find out from Robert now?
Come on, Robert.
Hey!
Hey!
Robert, how do you like the damn song?
I love the song, and it's true love. It's real music. Christopher Williams' voice is impeccable, as always. Man, he's got that soul of Teddy Pendergrass. I love Chris Williams. And I love that song.
Let me just say this to you.
Unconditional.
Let me say this to you, Simi. You need to get a new set of ears.
Simi got a buddy. Johnny Davis didn't like it. Johnny Davis didn't like it either.
I didn't say I didn't.
But Johnny
like
Davis,
it.
But Johnny Davis been around white folks too long to really like it. This might be a little too black for him. But here, get here.
Hey.
Hey.
Dancing hesitation in the way you made your love to me. Trying to test to see how imperfect love can be. Oh, I know you've been hurt before. I know how it is when you're trying to find.
Did you hear what he said? How imperfect perfect love can be. You got to listen to the lyric. The lyric is great.
The lyrics are sickening.
Yeah, we're going to have a guest today, you guys. His name is John L. Langston. He should be calling in any second here. I'm going to let you tell him. I'm going to let him tell you his story. I think this is John L. right here. I'm going to let him tell you his story. John L., is this you? I see a 314.
Yes, it is.
How you doing, Mr.
Donnell,
JT?
How are you, man?
I'm blessed, brother. How are you?
I'm fine. So Jonnell has a new book that's coming out. It's an audio book, as well as you can buy it as a reading book, right, Jonnell?
Well, right now I just have the audio book and the download available. I'm doing a different series of releases.
Okay. So so Jonnell, I want you to tell everybody your story, where you come from, how you started, and what made you write the book.
Well, number one, good morning, everybody. I just want to express myself. My name is Jonnell Langerston. You know, I grew up in a dysfunctional household where my mom was white, my dad is black, and she had been raped by my dad and came home with a black baby with very racist parents who could not accept her coming home with a black baby and pushed her out to the street. In this time frame, you got to keep in mind it was during the 60s, so it was very difficult. And then shortly after that, my dad ended up going to prison for murder. Now, being that my mom was the type of mom she was, she didn't really have an identification code with our culture, so she just took off and left. And, you know, that left me going from household to household in my dad's side of the family, which forced me to, you know, go through 13 different elementary schools, 11 different elementary schools before I reached the sixth grade. And now when you traveling and going back and forth like that, you don't get a chance to learn how to read and write. The fundamentals of sight words, high frequency words, this term is not known in our culture, which means there's 100 words you're supposed to know before the first grade. The, is, and. So I couldn't spell these words all the way up through high school. So, of course, you know, when you kind of growing up in an inner city area of Oakland, the things that stand out the most are the drug dealers. And I can recall one time in particular where we were doing a sixth grade class, and the teacher had a fireman come in and asked me, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I said, as a matter of fact, like, I'm going to be a drug lord. And I had my mind made up that was going to be my trade. And that trade became, you know, the backbone of my being. But as an inner city area, you know, kid, I had a natural tack for being an athlete as well, which is track and field. So I competed in track and field, landed a full scholarship to the University of Georgia, and I couldn't read or write, so they sent me back home. But that didn't stop me. Coaches did need an athlete, and some coaches was willing to pay. So I got paid to go to school, and I got paid to go to class, and never went to class, but they still passed me along. After my track career ended, I knew that it was still, you know, only thing waiting for me was that thug life. And so I came back home and picked up the sack and became a drug lord. Once I was arrested as a drug lord, I was sentenced to 25 years in the federal penitentiary for money laundering, tax evasion, and drug charges. This time frame was 15 years with the Institution of Correction, 10 years supervised release. And it was a struggle as a first-time offender going to jail, you know, and being very, you know, sort of say rebel-like. You know, the judge asked me to cooperate, and I asked him, did he know who I was? And that landed me 18 months in San Quentin Penitentiary for contempt of court. And I don't know if anyone had the experience, you know, going into a maximum state penitentiary, but it is not a joke, especially for someone who hasn't been convicted or found guilty. That struggle, you know, I don't really discuss too much, but I move on forward to being released from prison after doing 10 years, and for that 10 years in the hole for my being so rebel type of energy, I came home and I noticed that things were a little bit different. I mean, we think that when people come home from prison, we don't realize that when the judge sends us, we send our family. So I don't have anyone to come home to, no girl, no homies. Everything has just changed. So I'm kind of like out there trying to figure out where am I going to land. Well, while I was incarcerated, I started studying what they call ICC profiles. These are colors because I noticed that everybody coming back to the penitentiary with white-collar crimes was just getting tapped on the hand. So I said, well, you know what? When I get out, I'm going to do some counterfeiting. I'm going to become a better criminal. And somehow one year I spent a year in a hole for attempted murder in there, and I asked God, if you get me out of this, I'll come home and just fix this disease on the planet. I will pledge my life to make sure no other child of the inner city area visit this type of situation. And I made it through that, and I got out, and I built my name as being a person that can design and print product better than anybody else in the industry. So it wasn't long before Fat Effects was born, and I moved to Southern California and on a 90-day pass from my probation officer to start a company. The pressure was on. I had to find a place and not only find it, but then find customers and everything. And it wasn't long, you know, that happened. And I did a project. It was a no-name project that no one knew who he was. And the guy came in with a budget, and I said, listen, man, if you do, and I gave him a marketing campaign, and we launched the project, and that was for Nocturnal. He ended up getting a big deal with Elektra. That visibility of Nocturnal caught the eye of another company called Hidden Beach. I met with the program, product manager from Hidden Beach. He came to my office and gave me this spiel about this artist. And then I said, well, you know, because at this time, artists wasn't really looking like the artists that they were about to invest in. They had the Janet Jacksons, the Mariahs. These people were very, you know, groomed and in shape and all that. I said, well, why don't we put baby pictures up of this artist and make them here first? That artist was Jill Scott. We marketed that project out to being a Grammy nominee. So it wasn't at that point now, you know, these major labels started looking at me a little bit more serious. So next thing you know, I started producing the goods for just about every major label in the industry. You know, the Janet Jacksons, the Mariah, all that product was coming through me. I started buying up all the bus benches in California when I first came home. And so you see these bus benches all over California with rap on it. And no one knew, you know, nothing about that. They was walking around like zombies and just seeing the benches. And I'm like, okay, why is no advertisement on this? So I put Tupac up there, Snoop up there, and these projects started having longevity. And next thing you know, my name began to ring in the industry. And now I said, okay, you know, I'm doing well as a marketing, you know, printing company. What's next? You know, because obviously when I was incarcerated, I always kept hearing, well, if you apply yourself in the way that you applied yourself in the dope game, you'll be just as legit. You'll be just successful in the legitimate world. So my audio book is An Urban Child, which is the subtitle is The Parallel Between the Illicit Trade and the Legitimate Trade. I break down what product management is, what product placement is, and how we're doing these things from an illicit trade already, but we just don't know the language to make that transition, and that's why we're not making this transition. So I went on to open up a nonprofit called Urban Born. I founded it over 10 years ago, and this was a company that solely survived off of the contributions from my main company, Fat Effects. And I bought a huge building in East L.A. where blacks do not like Latinos and blacks do not get along. So in this conversion of not only wanting to help my people, I went into an area that was racist and didn't like black people. And I bridged the gap between these gangbangers, and we just was very successful at teaching kids to take their tagging, put it on a computer, and turn it into art and sell it as a product. So now we're doing financial literacy. We're doing entrepreneur skill programs. We're teaching kids how to deal with conflict and resolution through making movies and short films. So I said, this is not enough for me. I said, let me go ahead and figure out what I'm doing, because I was diagnosed with a disease called sarcoidosis, and they gave me 2 years to live. And I said, let me Google the worst place to live in the U.S. where my people dying the most. And that was St. Louis, Missouri. So I flew to St. Louis, and I just was overwhelmed with how it was all bad there. And I just decided to buy a school there. So I bought a school to take up a city block, and I expanded my nonprofit a year and a half ago into St. Louis, Missouri. And now we have over 200 kids in our program, and it's only through word of mouth.
That is outstanding. That's
awesome. Awesome. That is amazing.
So I want you guys to know that we're gonna hear some of the excerpts from your book, and I want you to tell me where you want me to start. But before we do, We're going to play some music. We're going to come right back. Our guest is Jonell Langston. 347-205-9366 is the call-in number, 347-205-9366. If you have a question for him, you can ask him right after this break. If any of you guys, any of the hosts have questions for him, you guys can ask him questions after the break, and then we're going to listen to a few excerpts from the book.
Sometimes when I turn on the TV and tune into the news, all I see about me is negativity. I become so overcome, so overwhelmed. I just let us take a step back and think, how are we going to get this world back on track? We got to come together.
Look at the world, all this hatred.
Is it you? We got to come together.
Either way you want to.
building further into the war zone of East L.A. I didn't speak any Spanish, but everybody we were helping was Spanish-speaking people. State representatives would drive by, and they would always wonder how come gang members wasn't tagging on my building, but yet tagging on the building right past mine. They couldn't quite get it. Everyone thought I was crazy for being one of the only black people in East L.A. helping Latino brothers get their life together. This area was saturated with gang members and homeless people and drugs. It took me about 6 months to clean the area up. When I first bought the property, I used to walk out and see our building tagged with clover. I decided that I would take the time and find out who these guys was tagging my building. And the only way to do that is to go out into the community and touch them hand by hand. What I would do is I would go down to Home Depot, ask the guy to call me every time somebody bought spray paint, and I would rush down to Home Depot with my camera crew, and I would follow the kids around and see where they was tagging, film them tagging, and I would approach them while they was tagging. I would appeal to them saying, look, your art is good, but let me teach you how to do that on the computer. One by one, I got kids to trust me, and one by one, we got kids to come in and practice their craft on the computer. It wasn't long before Clover Gang knew who we was and knew that we were once across the street from their rival gang members, Dogtown. The Dogtown people that I had befriended came down to their rival neighborhood to come in and see me because they had missed me. Every time they came down, they knew that they was coming into their rival gang area, but that did not stop them from wanting to come visit me. Having two gang members from two rival gangs that couldn't stand each other right in the same place, now talking in it, for whatever reason, the love that God put on my heart to share with them made it a ceasefire location. I wasn't sure at the time how I can impact a culture and what I could do to continue to grow in what I loved the most, which was making a difference for the culture. As the years went by and the success of Fat Effects constantly kept evolving to be able to stay relevant in the industry, no different than you would in an illicit trade, you always have to stay relevant. We would start off with regular weed to the endo weed to the kush, and the same thing with cocaine. Started off with powder, went on up to crack. Everything kept evolving. People always want to get something new. I began to create a nonprofit called Urban Born. This passion was always within me. I just didn't know how to express that passion. It's just like everything else in my life. Things seem to keep falling in place. God has a way of making that happen more than I even understood. I would go into different schools on career day and do events, and I would have the whole auditorium all excited within minutes. It would go down to a drip where I can whisper and they can hear me. Teachers was pretty impressed as to how I could keep some of the worst kids quiet in such a large form. We created academic games for learning and be fun at the same time. We would give away the newest CDs, the newest posters, and this would drive kids crazy when they can see that we had the latest items that they can get for free. I would always do extra good so I can give it away at the schools. I didn't know at the time, but I was helping the major labels promote their projects. Each time we went to the school, we would take the auditorium over. We would do three periods. In each period, we would go 6th grade, 7th grade, and 8th grade classrooms. All the kids from the 6th grade would be in the auditorium, and in the next period, all the 7th graders and so forth. And it became known that these kids were having a ball learning at the same time. Pretty soon, the schools was calling me and asking me to come and do career day along with come and do auditoriums. At this time, I called out to a friend of mine, Master P, and his son, Lil Romeo. I said, hey, Pete, I'm about to go to this school and do this event. You think you can do a surprise show up? It wasn't very hard to convince him to come. He jumped right at the opportunity. He said, man, you know me. I do whatever I can to help. I'll be there. I remember the day like it was yesterday. We did a school, and it had been gunshots across the street, and the school was on lockdown. Once the shooting take place, it was standard policy to lock the school down. One teacher in particular said, well, I already have my students in the auditorium for this event. The teacher that decided to stay in the auditorium had the worst kids in the school. They were all in special ed classes. Although the auditorium held about 600 kids, we only had about 30 in it. We still put on our best show and our best ability to communicate to those 30 kids. The principal came into the auditorium for a quick moment to see the program and let us know that we were going to only be able to do one period because of the shooting that took place across the street. The principal saw how the program was and knew at that point that every student in the whole school needed to see that. So they went against their normal policy and they brought in the next period and the auditorium was full. On this particular day, I had a surprise guest coming for the school kids for the 9th grade, which was going to be Lil Romeo and Master P. By this time, Master P had seen the work that I had been doing, coming by and seeing that I was really making an impact and decided to be a part of Urban Born full-fledged. Teaming up with Master P, Urban Born grew beyond the scope of my imagination. P began to take me from state to state into the poorest areas. We would have thousands of kids show up at our event. One day, P said we're going to go into an elementary school and do a read-along. Me thinking like I think, elementary was too young, I'm a little too hard in my message to even relate to kids that are in elementary school. I got to the elementary school a couple hours early so I can just see what elementary kids do. I had never been to elementary schools before. When I was there, the principal took the time to walk me around to each classroom and show me what was going on. I noticed that there were words in each classroom. I asked the teacher, why do you have these all over the place? She said, those are sight words. I started seeing kids with these words around their neck. I'm like, why do you got that word around a kid's neck like it's a necklace? She said, they're sight words. I said, what is sight words? She explained to me that sight words are the first 100 words your child's supposed to know before the first grade. Words that you can't sound out. These are words that...
Okay, this thing will keep going because it's so good that you can't turn it off. I want to first ask you, Jonelle, first of all, what changed you in prison from being that rebel, that put you in a hole for 4 years and it didn't infest you with that disease of anger which seems to permeate in African American males, especially, once we're incarcerated. What took you out of that, and what made you decide that you had to do something different, do something better, do something for the community?
You know, that's a good question. It's very easy to answer that. You know, for one thing, I always tell people, God will make you empty your cup to fill it again. I spent a year in the hole for attempted murder, J. King. I had been in a conflict and stabbed somebody. You know, somebody stabbed me, in my leg, and I beat him with a pull-down bar and bit a hole out of his face. You know, the fight got really, really, like, out there. And in that time frame, I had 15 stitches in the back of my head, knife wound, gouged out of my leg. You know, blood was dripping down my face from me biting a hole out of his cheekbone and spitting it out. And it just got real ugly. And this was an Aryan Nation dude that attempted to kill me because wanted to listen to the radio, I'm like, okay, I've turned into a wild animal. And in this time frame, one of the hardest things is to do for all the listeners out there, and you can try this, go in your bathroom and lock the door and stay there for 1 week. I'll tell you what. Don't even do it for a week. Do it for a weekend and depend on someone to feed you every day. See if you can last 1 weekend. And God will talk to you in that isolation. Whether you want to talk to God or not, you will find yourself in a conversation with him. As long as you open up your heart, you'll feel it. And in that time frame, that year, I felt God's presence in my soul more than I can even breathe at this moment. And that paradigm shift in my heart made me a new man. I knew I could not let my people suffer like this. I knew then that I had to die making sure my people stopped suffering like this.
I'm going to take a call, then I'm going to ask some of my hosts any questions they have. 916-501, please state your name, where you're from, question or statement. 916-501, take yourself off mute. I don't know why it is, Jonelle, but people mute themselves on my show.
Okay.
Before I can mute. Because...
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Oh, man, I didn't know you were talking to me, Jay. I'm sorry.
Well, you raised your hand.
I did.
Who's calling?
Hey, man. First of all, man, I love what you do, how you do. I just got hip to your show maybe a month or so ago. I love it, man. This cat that you got on here today, he mirrors my life in so many ways. It parallels. It's phenomenal. And my hat goes off to this young man because it is possible for African-American men to overcome all the challenges that are put before them if they make that application like what he was expounding on. I really, really appreciate this young man. I'm born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri, and I lived in L.A. 15 years. And I won't go into the parallels that me and this young man have. But, you know, I'm a CEO of a small enterprise right now and Quality Carpet Cleaning, and I just love what this man has done and is doing and will continue to do for our youth because they're in trouble, deep
Thank
trouble.
You. Yeah.
Don't grab
And why do you guys think, you know, since you guys, you know, if your lives mirror each other, I'm going to take it that you've been in prison before also. And what happens in prison, and I'm asking both of you guys this, what happens in prison that creates the atmosphere for somebody to come back repetitively? Because they say seven or eight out of ten guys, first-time offenders that go to prison, will go back again.
Well, you know, Jay King,
why is that?
You know, in my audiobook, I explain the rigor conditions that they put you under, and it's so easy to fail. It's like a trap. It's like the mouse trap. After a mouse has been killed on a mouse trap, believe it or not, mice still know that death was there on that mouse trap, and they still go back and get it. You know, I could give you another scenario, and this is one that I believe that everyone should really, really pay attention to. Trout survive off of eating guppies. They love eating guppies and little bitty fish off the bottom of the in the ocean. You take a fish tank and you put a glass to separate the fish tank from the guppies and the trout. You do that for 90 days, and then the trout will attempt to bite the guppies at a continuous base in that glass window. Keep hitting it, and they'll find that they can't get it. 90 days later, you take that glass out the way, and the guppies can actually hit their head against the trout mouth, and they won't eat it. In fact, the trout will starve themselves to death and die before biting it. And this is what's happening to our culture. We're blindsided and beat down so bad that things that are right in front of us and what retrospect should be the obvious is not obtainable because of the lack of resources is one thing. It's not the thing. It's knowing even what resource means. You understand what I'm saying? The culture has been so dummied down that when you get out and you get this big bling-bling advertised in front of you, and you have no way to grab it because you don't have the knowledge and the drill. I mean, I met a person in St. Louis that said they put the word L in lazy. I just couldn't believe it. You know what I'm saying? The motivation and all these things has been hitting them, you know, like they blindsided. And so, therefore, when a person get out of prison and people already give you this image of what you're supposed to be, you just start adapting and thinking that's what you are. So I take my hats off. We have to become entrepreneurs when we come out. If you do not practice your entrepreneur skills, you will drown in this mainstream America.
And both of you guys have done just that. Both of you guys are doing just that. You didn't go out and look for a job. You went out and created one. Let me do this right here. Books. If somebody wants to get your book, how do they get it?
It's very easy. You can log on to our PHATEFX.com, our Fat Effects page, and the book is right in front. PH, Pretty Hot and Tempting Effects, PHATEFX.com. Right on the front page, they can click on it.
Okay. And what about can they find it at Amazon or anywhere like that?
You know, iTunes asked me. We had so many downloads. I kid you not. iTunes sent me a contract to upload it to their server system. But, Jay King, it's something I learned from you years ago, you know, when I first had the privilege of meeting you on the original Club Nouveau. You owned everything about that project. I just got to tell your listeners this. It was unconventional for someone as an artist to drop a project and own everything on that project. This project, and what I felt is what I wanted to do, was create some content and don't use a middleman to get my product. You could download a 3-hour audiobook for $9.99. Do you know that same audiobook would have to be worth more money to even make 50 cents off of it from a distributor outlet? So these contracts that they're sending and the share that they want to take from you is almost like, okay, I can deal directly with the public. I wanted to adapt to that source of thought, like you, create a platform and deal directly with the public from me and just pay the government their taxes on it. Otherwise, by the time, you know, I get through with these contracts that's been coming my way, because we got over 3,000 downloads with before a week was out, just from word of mouth. You understand what I'm saying? People hearing the book, wanting to tell a friend about the book, and then people started just downloading the book. And, you know, if I would have did that with Amazon or what have you, instead of me making, you know, 10 times 3, you know, you guys can do the math on that, 10 times 3,000, it would have been, you know, instead of me making that money, it would have only been maybe, what, 2% of that, Mr. King, if I'm not mistaken?
Well, it's according to what your deal is. It can anywhere from 2 to 6% based on, you know, and actually when it all breaks down, it might be right around 2 or 3% when they start taking all of the deductions and
exactly,
and,
exactly. So I want to empower the culture into forgetting dealing with this middleman. And unfortunately, there's not enough outlets like you who are going to the public, creating a path so that, you know, you don't need to be validated by this mainstream America for your product. If they're not out there validating our culture, then our culture don't believe that the product is any good. And now they're saying, well, these are the same people that's oppressing our culture and keeping us in these chains. So now if you want to get out there, you need a publicist. Then the publicist is going to send it to an Arsenio show, and Arsenio ain't going to put you on the air because there's not no one getting a cut that's making his stuff work. You follow me? You cut that middleman out, they're going to cut you out. We have to empower each other and validate ourselves and create content that can go directly to the public from us without dealing with this mainstream America that is oppressing us. And I'm not racist. I'm just wanting to empower the culture to do the same thing. So I said, well, I'm going to create a platform, and you can buy it from me. And if I got friends that own stores in different markets, I can send them their product, and then they can put it on the shelf there.
So I'm getting people that are sending me text messages right now. So I can't send all you guys the website, but I just sent it to you, cousin, to my cousin Lisa. www.fateffects.com, and fat is spelled P-H-A-T, and effects is spelled E-F-X. So it's P-H-A-T-E-F-X.com. You guys can purchase the book, the audio book, from there. I know that we had an issue in the chat room that it went out, and so I hope that the sound came back for you guys. I know some of the show hosts have some questions, so who would like to ask a question first? I'm going to ask Lynn Tolliver first because he's the big cheese around here.
All right.
Lynn, did you have a question for him?
The question I wanted to ask, the guy that he tried to, you know, he attempted to kill, what happened to that guy since he attacked you? Was he punished in any way?
We both spent a year in a hole, you know, that year, you know, from Inglewood, Colorado, fighting our case, you know. Unfortunately, I wouldn't say anything. He wouldn't say anything, but it was obvious we had a conflict.
Okay.
Yes. Anybody else with a question?
Yes, I do have a question.
Okay, when you guys say yes, I have a question. And say your name, because he doesn't know you.
Yes, I have a question. My name is Simeon San Diego. How are you, man?
I'm blessed, brother. How are you?
Man, what a fantastic story. I noticed that, you know, and I'm dealing with the same thing so far as the you know, physical things that are happening in my body. And I also know that you go to a point, you know, I can relate to that bathroom scene very, very well. But there's always one point where you get that epiphany, that aha moment. And what I want to know is, what was it that really quickened your spirit that allowed you to say, you know what, this is what I'm supposed to do, and this is how I'm going to do it,
and I know it. What was that? What were the words that you heard? What was said to you?
Well, you know, it's a combination of ingredients. First of all, women that are out there listening, we don't realize that a woman has so much influence on our thoughts and what we become as a human being. There was a young lady, and I described this in my book, who I really was crazy about. And I remember being in Folsom State Penitentiary. Again, hadn't been sentenced, but because of my rebelness, they sent me out to the state penitentiary, Folsom, because at this time they didn't have NBC holdover tanks. And I wrote a letter to this girl using Reader's Digest, just the different books that we had access to. I tried to put the letter together based on what the books that I can see and recognize the words in these books. And when she got the letter, she drove all the way out to Folsom and put the letter up on the glass window. And she said, "I never knew." She just said, "I never knew." And I'm like, "Okay, what?" You know, and the letter didn't make no sense at all, okay? Even though I got the words from the book, the way that I tried to describe what I was going through and how I felt, it was like she couldn't believe that it didn't make no sense at all. So at that point, I knew, you know, that type of hurt that I seen on her face. Mind you, she was like third in her class at Cal Berkeley. To this day, she's like the president of Merrill Lynch. She rose to be like some super off-the-hook black woman. And, I mean, you know, just the look, that look stayed with me my whole penitentiary time. And I knew that in order for me to better myself, I had to start learning one word a day. Once I started reading the newspaper and learning one word a day, all the other things that you want to be will shine, because now you have the ability to make it manifest.
Wow.
Hey, King Jay, I have a question.
Anybody else have a question? Yeah, Mr. D.O.W., did you have a question?
I have a question.
Yeah,
King Jay.
Okay, Robert Redwine, did you hear what I just asked Mr. D.O.W.?
No, I didn't, King Jay.
You did hear me say, "Mr. D.O.W., do you have a question?" Then you said, "I have a question, King Jay."
Oh, no, I had a there was a skip
okay,
in
then
my
wait.
Phone or something. Okay,
I know. I know I had to bring you in three times. Let Mr. D.O.W. ask his question, then I'll let you ask your question, and then we have
no
other
problem.
Callers that want to ask questions. So go ahead, Mr.
No
D.O.W.
Problem.
Yeah, I have a comment and a question. First of all, I'd like to commend you for the great work that you're doing with our youth today, because as you stated earlier, it's so much is needed in almost every community. Now, my question is, with the nonprofit that you started, is that something that you're looking to expand further than just St. Louis, or is that something that's just based in St. Louis at this time?
Let me tell you guys a quick story on this. When I Googled the worst place to live, and I seen it was St. Louis for our culture, we're dying in St. Louis like you would never believe. I was buying the property. Now, mind you, my property I own in downtown L.A. is worth over $2 million. I only owe about $1 million on the property. I've never paid a bill late in my life, ever. Never. 800 factor score in three categories. Debt to ratio, loan, everything. I put 30% down, conventional loan, to buy this property in St. Louis. I put $85,000 down to buy the property. No problems. The bank told me everything is approved. Now, I have a go-between person. My accountant dealt with a bank person. I never once had a conversation with the underwriters for buying the property in St. Louis. This is very relevant to your question. So when the underwriters Googled my name, John L. Langerston, they seen what I have been doing in poor communities across the country. These people asked to talk to me. Now, mind you, I made it very clear to the person that was my liaison between me and the underwriters that was doing the loan. I said, "Listen, man, is there anything I can say to mess this loan up? Because I don't speak corporate language. I just don't. I am a product of my environment." These people told me on the other end of the line, my go-between brother, Nothing you can do, Jonelle. It's been approved. Everything is verified. Everything is going through. It's just a matter of format. I've never seen it happen before, but they just want to talk to you. I said, okay. So I got on the phone with these clear folks that I call them. I refer to them as being clear.
We call them safety, pasty substance around this piece.
Yeah, and so unfortunately, you know, again, you know, what you just asked me is what they asked me. You understand what I'm saying? Was my plan on to expand my nonprofit into these different areas? Well, I picked St. Louis not only because it was number one, but, you know, it's only two states in the U.S. that neighbors that many states. St. Louis and Tennessee neighbors. Tennessee neighbors 12 states, St. Louis neighbors 8, which makes it very easy to get in there and help, because this is where the slave trade was at for a reason. People can get here easier from the outskirts. And I made it clear. I said, listen, man, now I'm going to start with St. Louis and do it, because I'm tired of people saying, oh, well, what is you're going to try to do? No, it's not no try. We're going to do this. We're going to plug a hole in this prison industrial complex by starting with the kids. You understand what I'm saying? And they kept asking me. Not once did they ask me, how did I plan on paying the loan back? Not once. Matter of fact, my nonprofit wasn't buying the building. I was buying the building in my name. The nonprofit had nothing to do with the loan. Never once did they ask anything about me dealing with paying this loan or about me. They only wanted to know about Urban Born. When it came time to buy the property, they did not show up. I could not get them on the phone.
Wow.
Period. I had to pay cash and buy everything. Then once I bought it, I got here. They had let the building. These clear folks are super powerful. They cut the alarm off on the building, and I don't have to tell you, in the hood, they go in and strip out all the copper piping. So,
right.
Mind you, I got a whole city block just about. You understand? My gym is 40,000 square feet. Imagine replacing the copper in that alone. So, you know, it cost me a grip just to not only buy and spend cash, but then to get the place functional. So, you know, I got to tell you, yes, I'm going to expand. Yes, I'm going to train my people here how to engage culture. Because, mind you, we're not an educational center that we motivate kids to want to learn. There's a different approach with us. My son is 6 years old, can spell over 1,000 words in 3 languages. My daughter is just turned 4 and over 100 words in 3 languages. She knows all her sight words and some, like attention, attitude. I mean, she's in there way further than where he was at her age.
Okay. If you're looking to bring it, I just have one more comment, Jay, real quick. Jonelle, if you're looking to bring a program like that to Cleveland, let me be a contact for you, brother.
Oh, no doubt, brother. Please feel free to...
I will give
me.
You guys each other's information. I'll make sure that you guys are connected to each
okay.
other. Okay. Robert Redwine, what was your question?
Yeah, I have two questions for Jonelle. And first of all, I want to applaud this young corporate thug who made a great transformation and a paradigm shift from being in a dark place to just an enlightened place of innovation. I mean, coming into a game and revolutionizing to marketing and emotional strategy. But what I want to ask you, you know, as it relates to the digital divide in the record business, in terms of old conventional people who approach promotion from one way to the digital way, have you made that transition?
Absolutely.
And have you had some innovative concepts with that?
Absolutely. You know, I was, you know, first of all, I don't look at television. I don't listen to the radio. I survive off of human contact. I pay very close attention to the culture, and I opened up my other senses to life by cutting off that dummy down tube. When I want to watch a movie, I buy it. When I want to, you know, hear something, I don't get programmed. I do my own programming. So I was always on the pulse of watching the culture. I seen it coming before it happened. When Virgin shut down, I knew then it was an issue. How do you, a company like Virgin, and I can't tell you how many millions of dollars Virgin spent with me. Then DreamWorks, I mean, I've seen it firsthand. DreamWorks record division shut down and no one even knew. Do you understand what I'm saying? And then from there, I seen Loud go. I made an epiphany to the owner of Priority Records. I met him at the EMI music dinner 1 year, and I told him, I say, listen, man, you won't be in business in 3 years from now at the rate you're going. And my friend AJ looked at me crazy like, man, what is you doing telling this dude that? I'm just being honest with him. You see, our culture don't like the same thing over and over. We are a culture that has to evolve. We won't even wear the same shoes over and over. You understand what I'm saying? So you don't change with the rhythm of the culture. It's a rap. So, yes, Fat Effects is still in business after 15 years because we made that transition with it. And when I tell you, you get something printed from me and you get it printed from somebody else, there's a night and day difference in the amount of ink, the type of ink I use, the type of paper I use. It's night and day.
Right.
So the print needs is you've got to have those. Digital era is alive, but you got to have print goods no matter what.
Yep.
Right. So one more question.
And just so that you guys know, John L. does all the printing goods for Club Nouveau. You know, he's doing our manufacturing, our CDs, manufacturing our 8x10s, manufacturing our posters. So if you guys,
nice.
You know, if you guys have any printing goods that you need done, and the reason why is because his paper is heavier, his colors pop more. Actually, he did the Karen White, the first manufacturing product. He did the first ones before we went to EMI, and it's a quality work. So when people say black folks don't have quality work, that's not true. I want to say this. You know, a lot of people are saying, you know, I'm seeing people say, you know, I love what John L. is doing. He should bring this to Cleveland. He should bring this to, you know, Mississippi. He should bring this. No, you should bring it. And mm-hmm. I think that don't put so much weight on somebody's shoulder that they have to do everything. You know, this isn't just about money. Mm-hmm. It's more about the same way we do these radio shows. I don't get paid for doing this. Lynn doesn't get. We don't get paid for doing this. It costs me money. I pay money every month to do the radio shows and to allow other people to do their shows. It costs me money every month because I don't charge any other host on this show to be here because I think it's important that we have a voice out here. And we get up the same way we get up and do this. You got to get up and make something happen. You know, we have the power. And, you know, I told you guys the other day, I showed you guys 150 black women that were lynched. Not to show you the injustice that happens in this country, but to show you the fortitude and strength of our spirit, of our character, our resolve, of our community, of who we are. So, I applaud Janelle, who's my friend, and I've watched him. I watched this. I remember when he first bought the building. I remember when it was a small. He only had a portion of the building before he bought the whole building.
Yeah.
And I remember when he was when the manufacturing plant when he bought the bigger machines, the more expensive machines.
Yeah.
And I remember when all the major labels were going to him for a lot of their printing goods. And as that business stopped, there's companies like Crest National that have been around 60 years.
Yep, and down and gone.
And I know Evan Stein, I know his dad. You know, the Stein family owned Crest National. They're friends of mine. I remember when they moved out to Orange County because they did a deal with China.
Yeah.
And the deal with China fell through.
Yeah.
Huh?
Jay, this is Lady T. Can I ask a question?
Yeah. Yes, you can.
Hi, Jenna. I just want to applaud you by being, a biracial black woman for going out into the community and doing what you're doing for our black men because there are so many strikes against them that it is mind-blowing that,
right.
You know, that you can step in and help them out in other ways that other people can't. And Jay is so right. Help him. Help him to help us to help him. He doesn't have to do everything on his own. Bring things to him so that we can involve ourselves into his community and help him.
Or do it yourself.
do it yourself and do your own nonprofit.
And,
yeah.
And let him, give him a branch to lock onto.
Right.
If you got something started, it's easy for somebody like a Janelle to bring a program into something that's already there. But for us, and I think what we do, and we've done it before, we do it in the community all the time. We put so much weight on one person and we weigh them down. And so I think, you know, leadership, we have to do like the Jews do. They have leaders in every community. You know, they create a program, and that program just, you know, just goes from one community to the next. We have another caller, 916-613. Please state your name, where you're from, question or statement.
Denise Brown from Sacramento, California. And, Jay, it's great to have this program. My husband, Larry Brown, with Quality Carpet Cleaning, tuned me in. So I turned on this morning, and I am so flabbergasted by your awesome guest and by your show. This is a wonderful thing that you're doing, and John Langerson, you are the man. My husband and
thank you,
sister. You guys have so much in common, and my husband has always said what you said. If we can get our young men to take it from the illicit to the legal, legitimate, they'd be off the chain. So I applaud you, and I am so proud of you and my husband. You two are two peas in a pod, and he is born and raised in St. Louis. So that's my husband's beginnings. He's been so many different places, but he's a man of God, a businessman, a wonderful father, an awesome husband, and he's my friend as well. So thank you so much for being on the show. And, Jay, thank you for letting him have this voice. It's beautiful, and I commend you as well, Jay.
Well, I mean, we're where the people come together. That's the Jay King Network. That's what we say all the time. Janelle,
right.
I say this all the time about young African American men. Number one, I say first of all, our generation, that includes me and you, we failed these young black men in a sense because we didn't tell them what we already knew, which is that we have so much power as African American men. We're so powerful that if one of us gets on an elevator with 10 white men, we make them nervous.
Yes.
It's our power. And so a lot of what we think, and I'm guilty of this because I've done it, where a young African-American male who's hot-headed, who don't listen, you know, I say, you know what, that's on him. He got to go take his ass whooping on his own, as opposed to me corralling that energy, because we have so much power and energy. And now I get it. Now I know that as a black man, I'm so powerful that if I don't harness this energy, it can go crazy.
Yeah.
It could make me look crazy. You know, it's too much. And so that's what we have. We have a lot of these young African-American males that look wayward or troubled. It's not that they're wayward or troubled at all. The problem is that they don't understand the energy and the power that they are. And I know that because I'm 52, and I'm just under the power and energy that I am. How do you think we get this message out in mass quantity to these young men so that we can harness this energy and turn it into something good, because it really is good. It's just that it gets so crazy they can't even control it, and it gets out of hand for them.
Well, you know, I'm 52 as well, Jay, and I'm gonna tell you what I didn't tell you guys, and again, my nonprofit is Urban Born. You can log on to Urban Born and see what we've been doing for the last 10 years. We have a...
Now, Urban Born, please spell that for us, because I'm putting it in the chat room.
It's www.urban, Urban, Born, BORN.org, urbanborn.org.
Right, so it's just like it's spelled. You know, sometimes people add the E and all that stuff, so I just want... So www.urbanborn.org, you guys should go there now, and if you're in the chat room, if you guys are listening on another device, Urban Born Brainnasium,
exactly.
Brainnasium, okay. Brainnasium.
That's our gym in St. Louis. That's our school. Let me tell you, Jay King, what I just tried to do with the listeners of my audio book is take them right there with me. What I didn't tell you earlier in the introductory was that when I went to San Quentin, they had really, I mean, their goal was to break me and get me to cooperate against people who they knew I was doing business with, who had big names in the drug world. And I kid you not, while I was in Quentin, all I wanted to do was die. I wanted to commit suicide. And this mindset of dying in there consumed me as a black man. My power had been raped from my whole heart. I went, as they say, temporarily insane. They degrade us, and they put us in this situation where we don't even feel like we have any hope. And that is where the paradigm shift in my heart to live took place. I wanted to die. I tried to commit suicide. They wouldn't give me the razor, and the lady stood there. She knew something was going on. I give my sisters their props because, again, black women, she knew that it was something in me that was about to happen. She would talk to me in front of the gate, you know, and I'm sitting in here. And finally, you know, I said, well, you know, I'm just going to starve myself to die. Now, I don't know if you guys know, but when you starve yourself to death, it is a very painful, painful death. You understand what I'm saying? So by the third day of not eating or drinking anything, the D-block tier was basically chatting my name, talking about I was a rebel. I'm thinking, I want to die. And they are encouraging me with the strength that they see me to even have to kill myself through starvation. And finally, on the third day, the lady convinced the warden to get us out of San Quentin because we would have a lawsuit if this man died. And what they do is they rush your cell on the third day, and they force you to eat. They tie you down, strap you down, and they put a needle in your arm, and they force you to get food through a needle because they don't want you to die in there. That's something that they can't have happen. When you reach that level of life,
the money that you it goes down the drain. Johnnell, we normally pray before the end of our show, so I'm going to do our prayer real quick, and we're going to come right to you, okay?
Okay.
Another day has been granted. We have lost some others, the circle of life. The plan is you have platform. Some of us understand, others are confused with the matter, and then there are some that add to that confusion. For those of us who seek the truth, help us find it. Wading through the mud and trash that clutters our minds, sift the weeds of our thoughts and bring us where we need to be for inner peace and strength. Guide us, O Lord, and help us. Enhance our spiritual endurance. Show us how to go and help us reach our destinations of joy and your glory. Amen.
Don't forget to tune into the music business the way I see it tonight from 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time right here on the J. King Network. Tonight we're going to discuss marketing and promotions in a changing business. How do we market and promote in this changing business effectively? We're going to talk about it. And is radio that important? How do videos work, websites, all that stuff. So that it'll be on tonight, 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time right here on the J. King Network. Johnnell Langerston was our guest today, and Lynn, again, I mean, you know, we went from last week when we went to, when we talked about on Friday, we talked about 150 black women. That were lynched in America to doing this show today. I think it's really, you know, we've been on a roll this last few times. What did we do the other day, Simi? Because Simi said, man, we was... What did we do before we did the black women?
Well, we did the you were talking about depression, and everybody had to express, if they had dealt with that type of depression. And, you know, it was very, very thick in the studio, man, very thick. So you went back to back really, really hard, but it was good.
Yeah. And I want to say, you guys, you know, I don't know if you guys remember Tommy, who was a Chicago Bull fan. He used to listen to the Laker Girl show. He was a host with Laker Girl for a little while, but he was sick. He had cancer. I believe bone marrow cancer. Well, he lost his battle with the disease.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry to hear that.
That's why he hadn't been at the network in a while. So, you guys, you got to get busy living because we're going to have enough time dying. Any of us that are born into this world, the day that you're born is the day that that your stopwatch starts ticking for you, for your life to end. So it's important that you get out here, you get after this thing called life, and you give it all you got, and you do the best you got, and not just today, but every day, and even on the days when it don't, you know. And I'm going to tell you something, you know, we have those days, all of us, where you just feel like, you know, why am I doing this? You know, when is this, you know, when is this thing going to end? It's too much pressure. I'm tired. You know, the struggle is too much. You know, nothing seems to be going right. I'm in the same position I was in yesterday, today, and I can't take it. And I know we've all had this conversation before at some time in our lives, if not right now. And the beautiful thing about God is if you trust him, and if you change you and start looking at you, don't worry about anything around you. Don't worry about what people are doing around you. You worry about you. Change what's happening inside of you, and I promise the people around you will change. And that's what you do. That's how you get past this. And you know, and it's, you know, some people gonna say, ah, jazz, hocus pocus, and alakazam. No, it's not. It's real. I know because I've done it. And I tell you guys all the time, if you have a lot of drama in your life, it's because you are a lot of drama in your life. Because it begins and ends with you. If you have a lot of love in your life, it's because you are a lot of love, and you give a lot of love in your life, because it begins and ends with you. So, you know, be responsible. Be responsible for you. If the one thing I got to say, Jonell, I've watched not only your message, how it's evolved. I've watched you as you evolved in delivering the message. Where before you were probably a little more hardcore at delivering the message than you are today. Because you
Jay, I would like to
say, order for that message. I'm sorry, go ahead, what did you say?
I want to add to your thought pattern about change. You know, for all the listeners out there, God does work through us. In many ways, the breath that we breathe is God's breath. Take a deep breath and know that that's the spirit of God in your heartbeat. When I stopped cussing, I started seeing things that I never would see before, just in my words that I would use as a human being. If you believe that sound doesn't affect you, walk into a room where music is being played and watch people dancing and moving as if the spirit of life is just all good. You go to church, you see someone get filled with the Holy Ghost, and they talking and they chatting. That is a way that people communicate through the breath that God has given you to God. When you want to communicate with Satan, all you have to do is start cussing, and he will come into you in a way you ain't never seen. Get angry and start cussing. It won't be long before someone get hurt after that. But if you angry and you not using those satanic words, the likelihood of you getting angry enough to hurt someone is non-existent. But when you start cussing and you angry...
Jonell, I'm sorry. I got to cut you off because we got 30 seconds.
All right.
Come back and see us tomorrow if you want to. Come back through. My name is Jay King with Lynn Tolliver, Robert Redwine, Johnny Graham Cracker Davis, Mr. D.O.W., San Diego Simi, and, of course, the Tenacious Lady T, telling you to get busy living because you're going to have enough time dying. We're Kings in the Morning. We're out. Go out there and get after life. Thank you, Jonell Langiston, for being a guest on our show.
Kings in the Morning.